live from the Third Coast. It is our time to focus on where genealogy and spirit connect. A time to focus on our connection with ourselves and our past. Here's your host, Susan E. King.
King with a wonderful guest today. Hope y'all are all getting ready, I guess, for the weekend that's coming up. It's the 4th of July, and we're going down to the beach. I don't know what everybody else is going to do, but that's my favorite thing to do. I usually have an opportunity to play a gig on those steel drums that you all just heard every July 3rd, watch the fireworks. So looking forward to it, looking to get out of town for a little bit. In any event, we have an exciting show today. We've got Debbie Edwards, who does a little bit of everything, actually. She's a medium, an author. She's a pen and ink artist, and she also does channeling. So without further ado, I want to welcome Debbie to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Susan. Thank you for having me on. I think this is going to be a really great day, and I'm sitting here in the sunshine and listening to the birds, and, I appreciate you having me on, and I look forward to speaking with your guest.
Well, we're going to open up the lines a little later in the show, but, you know, one of the things that caught my attention in your bio, and I'd like for you to kind of give us a little bit more background, is that the first thing that you say is your heritage, and being a genealogist, I kind of get in tune to those kinds of things. So it says that you're full-blooded Irish with roots of Cherokee Indian and the French. How about that? That's quite a mixture.
Yeah, you know, and a lot of that actually was a missing piece to the puzzle that I didn't really uncover until about 3-4 years ago when I met my biological father. So the French and the Cherokee was not something confirmed for me until recently. But, and I have Irish on both sides of my family. On my mother's side, it is full Irish. So, you know, having that combination of backgrounds, it's definitely an interesting thing. And, of course, feature-wise, I most certainly take on the Irish appeal with, reddish-blonde hair to, you know, the green eyes and really fair skin. So, you know, it's certainly something interesting. And, you know, as far as the channeling on both sides of my family, that's an interesting thing, too. I'm really the first person that has gone in this particular direction. Most of my family, we've had a priest on one side, we've had somebody that's gone more towards metaphysics and science, and then we've had, my mother and my grandmother, has gone more towards being, I don't want to say the closet psychic, where it's just we have the conversations in private, but outside of that, it's not really there, but it does run in our family, and it is quite prevalent. But for me, I think I'm the first person that stood on a podium, and said, hey, this is me and this is what I do.
That's interesting. So other members of your family have done this kind of work, but you're really the first one that's doing it professionally, more or less, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, and it's something that I had the privilege to learn a lot about this when I was younger. Whether or not I had the instruction, I don't know necessarily if I would have been deterred from it anyway, because it's something that was always really strong for me. I had, past life memories from the time I was 5. It's really interesting because you see a lot of kids now today that have the same thing where they feel a bit displaced with their age and sometimes with their gender, So you see children that really remember what it's like to be an adult and give authority, but yet here they are 4 and 5 years old, having to receive authority. So it's sometimes a difficult thing to really place one's identity when you have sometimes a slight recollection of all of these other past lives.
You know, that's interesting because, one of the things that you and I communicated about prior to the show, which is something as a genealogist, I had a lot of these same kinds of things growing up in the 50s. I mean, I was, very, very, I guess, adult in my early years. I think in my later years, I've become more of a child for a few years just to kind of get a feel for that. But in any event, I remember when my grandfather died when I was 5 years old, and I remember talking to him. I remember exactly where I was, and where I had this communications and what he said to me and how he said it. And, you know, it was very powerful and, you know, always seemed to be semi-connected with another world. I don't know how you would say that. But in my work as a genealogist, and one of the things that caught my attention on your bio was a topic called remote viewing. And I think that it's something that, you know, we probably all do some of. We just don't realize what we're doing. And I wanted to kind of focus us a little bit on the early part of the show on this topic of remote viewing, because, you know, when I work on cases for clients, you know, I sometimes go into this mode where I'm actually visualizing and, you know, where they were and what they were doing, even if I don't know that for a fact. And I find that as I do the research, that it really does help me a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really a fascinating thing, too, because where it started for me, and I didn't realize exactly that's what it was, because when I was younger, you know, when you hear remote viewing, you think of, okay, military, you know, Secret Service, that kind of thing, and at least I did anyway. you know, but as far as remote viewing, it's like being able to follow a trace of clues. And those clues really come, you know, mentally, they come through different telepathic signatures, energetic signatures. And for me, what I do, in short, it's like connecting to someone's energy and being able to view those little energetic signatures that reside within that person's energetic field. Sometimes it's on the outer field, you know, as such the aura. But then sometimes it comes through the form of their memories, and that can even be traced back into their past life memories. So, you know, if it's something that the soul has kept, it is something that is visible to be viewed. Just depending on the timing, if it's appropriate at that time for that to come to the surface. But, yeah, it is interesting. And when I take a look at, you know, I'd have to say, like, psychic investigators that are looking for missing children, I would have to say their remote viewing skills are really incredibly acute, because for them to be able to trace piece by piece, you know, where somebody's last moments of life were, you know, were they being driven down a dirt road, what was the road name, you know, that sort of thing. So it can go in multiple directions. It can go in the direction of, you know, tracing back memories. It can go in the direction of finding people, or even sometimes, you know, when we look at medical intuitive, it's like being able to remote view specific, you know, health signatures that are going on within the body. If it's the organs, if it's, you know, the thought process manifesting, you know, into physical illnesses. So there's multiple parts of it, but really it's just a matter of narrowing down, you know, the images, the sensations, whether it's through, you know, a soft sense of clairaudience, clairvoyance, you know, the clairsentience, the clear seeing, hearing, and feeling, of being able to pinpoint and narrow down specific things so that you can give somebody the information or you can write it down. And through the series of notes, the series of things that you get, it's like it starts to form a picture. And then within that picture, we're able to actually interpret or decipher whether it's something literal or something symbolic. So, you know, it, hopefully that didn't lose anybody in that explanation. But, you know, in short, that's a good way to be able to describe it.
Well, let's put it into real-time situation. I mean, I've been watching, I guess as many have, this Casey Anthony trial. And yesterday there was a big story surrounding a, quote, psychic who actually led some of the investigators or private investigators to the place where Kaylee's body was. And in the interview that I heard with this individual, she had it in a dream. She saw the picture. She saw the location. She saw everything, which in my understanding of things, and correct me if I'm wrong, is really not psychic as much as it is remote viewing, in my opinion, for her to be able to see and sense something like that. And I think maybe we get all these terminologies confused a little bit, but is that really a correct way of looking at it?
Well, it's kind of a combination built on a platform of psychic reception. I don't think she would have received the dream if she hadn't had or hadn't been tuned into her form of psychic reception. which is a little bit different than psychic projection, because where we're projecting, you know, our thoughts, our intentions, our emotions, that's a bit different. However, it still works in the same way, because whatever is sent out does connect with its intended source of projection. But considering she received her message in a dream, I would see it as that, of course, she's already open psychically, so she's receiving information, but the method to which it comes in the dream state would make sense to me to categorize it as a type of remote viewing, because she is getting specific point by point by point, you know, things as far as location, probably time of day or night, time of year, that's important too. So really, I would have to look at remote viewing as a really broad way of being able to send and receive, you know, signals and information. One of the interesting things recently that we've been researching when it comes to remote viewing is the fact that a lot of our dreams that we get where we're in pursuit of something, we're in pursuit of whether it's a person, information, trying to piece things together, that sometimes we're actually not the only one receiving it. And then on top of that, sometimes what we receive is actually a projection of someone else that's trying to find the information too. So with that said, when we take a look at a big case like this with, you know, with JC and Kaylee, you know, the fact that this was media publicized, you've got all sorts of people that are, you know, putting their own two cents in, but you've also got a lot of people that are psychically receptive that want to, you know, validate what they get, or they want to pursue, you know, to find the body. All of these people putting that energy forward, projecting that energy of intention to find her, can sometimes actually create, how do I put it, a sort of a signature of its own. So what I mean by that is, let's say, you know, before they found the body, let's say you've got five psychics that come forward. Three of them see the body in the woods. One of them sees the body, let's say, just in the trunk of the car, and then the other sees the body in some completely other type of thing. Those energies mixed together, depending on how strong the correct version is, will depend or will determine how many other people actually see the correct version. So to me, when it comes to psychic investigations, you know, we actually get inundated by the projection of what the family thinks happened to the child or what the investigators think happened to the child. So it's really a process of elimination, which version is correct. And that's why it takes so long for investigators to find bodies sometimes, because we really are receiving, you know, the projected thoughts of family, you know, law enforcement. And then also you have the person that actually was assaulted or, you know, buried or, you know, that passed on, you know, that oftentimes actually is not the component to giving the information. Usually they step aside, at least from my experience. They're not the ones that are forthcoming. A lot of times it's the perpetrator or the assaulter, or assailant rather, that we actually find the bodies through. It's the energy that they keep current. That memory of what they did is how we actually find it, rather than the person that passed.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I know that you know, when I'm working on some of my genealogy cases, that, and especially those that are, you know, kind of cumbersome and brick walls that need a little thought, is that, you know, I do sometimes get mixed messages from what the client has told me versus what I'm getting. And, you know, sorting through that, and I always find that usually when I sort through that, the client's usually not right. You can't tell them that, of course, but, you know, you have to really go about proving the fact that the client is not right. But you do get the mixture of that, and that kind of does derail the process just a little bit, so to speak.
Yeah, and remote viewing is such an asset. It is such a tool when it comes to finding missing people, because you're going through a process of elimination of actual physical and time-stamped events. Whereas, you know, when we look to connect with the person's energy that has passed, you know, let's say a young girl's been murdered, okay, we'll just give a scenario. A lot of psychics will try to reach and connect to the person that passed. And the thing is a lot of times they're really not in a vibration or in a position to offer the information, because they don't even have clarity, because things have not fully come, you know, how do I put it, things haven't come to light completely yet. Things haven't come full circle. So they're still in the process of being part of the story. They're not at the end of it recalling events. And it's not always the case, but most often the case. And so when we see a lot of, people that are in pursuit of information, that's where things get really muddy because it's, unfortunately, we're human, you know, so we have our own opinion and, you know, our own thought on what happened. And a lot of times that does dilute the purity of the information because we get sidetracked by our own assumptions, even though we try not to, but we're still human and we do. We don't have the full picture yet. So what I've found to be successful is to really connect and attach to the person that has either, you know, caused the passing, the people that knew the situation, but whoever it is that's still here on this earth that knows information about the passing or the missing person, I find is the most concrete way to go, because especially if they're trying to cover something up or there's guilt or there's even, you know, some type of twisted pride over it, they're still sending out that pure memory of it. So it's easier to trace that than it is to trace something that is still in the process of, you know, trying to uncover what exactly happened. And it's very difficult, especially when you have very strong emotions with a large body of people, a large family that's involved. You have a lot of anger, a lot of resentment, fear, all of these things. Those energies can create a lot of blockages, a lot of walls, and a lot of difficulty in trying to get to the truth. But, you know, the person that is involved or that, you know, created that situation, to me, seems to be the most pure source to locate and, be able to trace those steps there. But then when you're looking at people, say, they go hiking in the woods and they fall and break their neck and nobody ever finds them, those are really tough because there is no crime committed. So what do you really trace except their last moment? So it can be difficult unless they're ready, you know, and they're in a position to communicate, you know, through dreams or communicate through mediums or things like that, from the spirit realm. It can take a long time to find people that are missing.
I was having dinner with a group that I meet with on Monday nights. And interestingly enough, well, this woman is very interested in the work that I do. And she mentioned, and it was really, it caught me way off guard, that her sister was murdered back in 1987. And it's very interesting because it was a very gruesome murder. She was a realtor. And I actually remember the story because it was at that particular time that I made the decision that I wasn't going to go roaming the streets at night like I used to, even though I was still quite a youngster. Haha. In any event, you know, it was that touching to me. And I mean, it was really kind of amazing that came up really the night before you were going to be on the show, because, it was something I didn't know anything about, of course, and I didn't realize any connection that she had. So, in any event, that's just a sideline. So, in addition to the remote viewing, you do tarot readings, palm readings, psychic readings, animal messenger readings, correct?
Yeah, it's kind of a whole group of it. You know, really, I break it down to, different channels of energy. And they all carry, you know, specific vibrations. And, you know, it's fascinating looking back on it because I didn't start out on this path saying, okay, I'm going to spend the rest of my life doing this and, you know, really exploring all of the varieties of the ways we can receive messages. It just sort of happened. And, it's one of those things that there are different forms. People respond to messages differently, you know. So somebody may respond to a tarot reading very positively, you know, and that may be the way that they connect and they communicate. And then you have somebody else that would connect rather with, you know, dream interpretations, and then someone else connecting specifically with their guides, with their guardians in spirit, you know, through mediumship. So it's each person responds to something a little bit different, and I think that, you know, the more varieties we have to communicate, the better, because we can reach more people that way. But, really the end result is a message is delivered. We just have different languages for it, using energy.
Yes, and that's really what I think most people are really looking for. I mean, whether it's a connection with someone in who has passed on, or a connection, you know, with themselves, or a connection with, really helping to connect with their soul and what their purpose is. I mean, they're just 101 varieties, and then there are those of us who have dogs and who are dog lovers and want to trying to figure out why dogs do certain things at certain times or have certain habits that they didn't have before, which is very intriguing to me. In any event, we're going to open up the lines. Let me give you the phone number. It's 888-815-9756. If you have any questions for Debbie, or Deb as she signed her messages, we'll call her that, or you want a reading, give us a call, 888-815-9756. So you've been writing quite a bit lately.
Yeah, well, you know, it just depends on what type of writing we get into. I actually, have several different areas of interest, but, I've completed a second book actually this last December, which has a really fascinating story to it, because when I started the book the December prior, it took me a year to write it, my intention with it, because it was fiction, was to just follow the pull I kept getting. It was something I couldn't stop writing. I couldn't put it down. And I didn't understand because, you know, I prefer to do articles, nonfiction books, you know, that sort of thing. But this was a really compelling story, and it was about a young man who died in a car accident. And it took multiple different directions, yeah. And, you know, it had the part where, you know, he was coming through to talk about what the afterlife really was like, what his intention was to work with the family and why he died young, and to help his sister, who is the driver, work through her grief. And, you know, there were a lot of different dynamics to it. The interesting part of it, as time went on, I just couldn't formulate a title. And then finally, in the last revision, I formulated a title, and it became really, the title itself was the memorial of how they, you know, honored his spirit. And without giving a whole lot away, there, you know, the family ended up planting a tree in his honor. So it's titled The Red Family Tree. The thing about the book is that I went into it thinking it was fiction, and it really didn't turn out to be that way. Long story short, I've lived in, you know, a remote cabin in the woods, you know, and that's why I'm talking to you on a Bluetooth here, because of my cell signal. But the thing is that I didn't meet my neighbors until recently, and it wasn't until even more recently that I actually became close with them. And long story short, you know, they lost a son in a car accident. And as we're comparing notes, and she's finishing the book now, but as we're comparing notes, it's almost as if I wrote about her son. And it's as if he took an entire year with me to give all of these details in first person to say, Mom, this is me. You know, this is what really happened. This is my perspective. And I can see and acknowledge what's happening to the rest of the family. You know, so it just, it was pretty interesting, you know, the experience itself, yeah. But, I mean, those things happen, and in my writing is a physical form of channeling, if you will, because a lot of times I'll just sit down, and it will be a message that needs to be delivered to the right person, but until I write it, you know, I'm not able to connect to the person. The person could be, you know, somewhere overseas, or it could be, you know, like in this situation, you know, a neighbor right there. You know, and just being able to communicate with her and say, well, funny you should mention your son passed away. I just wrote this book. So it's a way to validate something that otherwise I don't know would be able to be validated. But that's just a recent experience. But
you know, that's pretty that's astonishing. That is astonishing. Did you have this neighbor read the book? And I mean, have you really gone through and made a list of the things that were accurate or not accurate? I mean, that is astonishing.
Yeah, she, you know, as a matter of fact, last night she finished it. She had back surgery today, so I haven't yet spoken to her. However, when I was telling her bits and pieces of the book, she's like, oh my gosh. She's like, well, this is this and this is this. She was validating a lot of things, and it's interesting because the book really is written from the sister's perspective. The sister always blamed herself for the death, and which is, you know, case in point in real life to my neighbor. You know, the sister blames herself for her brother's passing. What's really, I guess the whole thing is that, you know, yes, it was a car accident. That's the same thing. There was a car fire. That was the same thing. And the driver ended up in a wheelchair. That was the same thing. The only difference was that in my book, it was the sister driving, whereas in real life, it was his best friend driving. So the thing was is that the whole dynamic written from the sister's perspective really does make a lot of sense because she carries grief almost stronger than anybody else. So it makes sense to why she drew my attention more than anyone else to put it in her perspective. But, yeah, it's pretty fascinating. I mean, down to, you know, Christmas being favorite time of year, you know, packing up decorations, you know, that used to be a tradition and now the sister has to do it instead of the brother. And I mean, little stuff like that, you know, we're pretty much exact. And so it's, you know, I'm always fascinated by the way spirit and people in spirit go out of their way and put so much energy forth to get a message to us. You know, we're the ones really that receive and we're open to receiving the message. They put forth a lot of the effort, but, you know, our part of communication is asking for specific signs and asking for that communication and not being afraid of how it comes. You know, because there's many forms that they give us messages, whether it's through music, through physical, little physical signs, through animals, you know, and that's where the animal totem stuff comes into, you know, so it's pretty interesting. We really share the same energy. It's just that we're in different vibrations. That's really all the veil is a gap in our vibration. You know, we're at a lower, denser energy, and they're at a higher, less dense energy because they're not in physical form. So that's the only thing that separates us. That's it. You know,
and you know, and people are saying, too, that you know, as we move into 2012, is that veil is kind of thinning as well. Is that something that you believe in?
Yeah, and, you know, for me, I really do support that because my understanding of the veil itself, all it is a gap in vibrational signatures. You know, if you have a vibration that moves fast enough and then a vibration that moves slow enough, those two vibrations are not compatible to meet each other in the middle. That's where the veil comes. What's happening now is that because the earth is resonating at a higher hertz, you know, everything on the earth is resonating higher in vibration. So what's happening is we're just naturally evolving to a higher vibration. So we're closer aligned to spirit energy. And simply, and that's why a lot of people are experiencing, you know, different aspects of psychic phenomena, deja vu, you know, messages, premonitions in their dreams. Those little moments of being able to pick up on things, empathic energies are at an all-time high. So it's like we're seeing a lot of the ways that these energies are affecting the physical body. I mean, I think some people are getting confused by it, but the cool thing is that we're all starting to move towards that. But as we're becoming more and more aware of things around us through this, you know, extrasensory or heightened, sensory perception, we're becoming more involved in a lot of things that are happening globally, you know, whether it's political, environmental, social, all of these things. We're now reaching a global scale, and I really think that that's where our climate is right now at such a high tension when it comes to so many things happening across the globe. Because before, in a denser vibration, you know, cultures were much more separated. Of course, we can look at the Internet, too, but you know, we were more separated. We didn't reach out. We didn't have an interest or a concern for things that were happening 5,000 miles away like we do now. So we're seeing a lot of shifts and a lot of changes, and that's where they talk about with 2012. You know, we're at the end of a cycle with the Mayan calendar. We're also at a specific position within the galaxy. And, you know, so a lot of conversions are happening all at once that we have not had in recorded history, which is pretty exciting, you know, and a lot of scientists and physicists, you know, we really don't know what to expect. But for me, spiritually, I don't feel like it's anything bad. I just think it's different. It's not good or bad. It's just different. And people, you know, may have a tough time with it. And some people may actually, you know, just completely embrace what they're here to do and have a wonderful time with it.
That's how I've chosen to deal with it. you know, I mean, I definitely sense a shift and have been for about 2 to 3 years, both in my energy and in the energy of other people. And one of the things, Debbie, I've noticed too is that as my energy shifts, the people that I was closest to don't seem to be in the same place that they were with me prior to all this. Is this part and parcel? I'm feeling a little bit on the alone side. I don't know what it is. I mean, I know it's definitely something's definitely in motion.
Yeah, well, our perception and our awareness is shifting. Therefore, how we relate to people shifts too. This is at an all-time high right now, and it's going to keep growing, really. So for the next, I would say, 5 to 10 years, we are transitioning from one soul circle, one family soul circle, to the next family soul circle. And what that means, we're finishing karma. A lot of our past lives are coming full circle where we're able to have resolution but also release. We're finding people that don't really feel connected biologically to the family. They are biologically connected, even though, you know, okay, I'm here, I'm part of this family, but I don't really resonate with this family. We're being repositioned, but that's just the natural process of what's taking place. So it's not anything to grieve over. A lot of people are at a loss. They're feeling confused because, you know, let's say friends that they've had for 25 plus years, all of a sudden it falls away. But that's just part of it because, you know, it's time for us now to, I don't want to say graduate and go to the next step, but it's time for us to embrace now the next generation that we're meant to be part of. And by doing that, sometimes, you know, we have to say goodbye to the generation we've closed the circle with. So that's really all it is. And it's taken lifetimes to come full circle, you know, with most people. And that's why this lifetime can be extremely challenging, because we're finishing so many karmic things that it feels intense. Everything is intense, you know, but that's okay. And the beauty of it is a lot of people are able to finally finish a lot of karma or close these karmic circles without having to cross over to do it. You know, so we're doing this in midstream, and now it's like we're restarting life while still being here. So it feels different for a lot of people. It's a brand new thing, you know, but it's a good thing too.
You know, that's kind of interesting what you said. So let me see if I can wrap my arms around that a little bit. So really what you're saying is that, you know, I mean, we hear about lots of people checking out of this lifetime. And I know that I've seen it in my circles too. But what you're really saying is that we really are kind of rebirthing ourselves, but not dying first to go through the rebirth and to be able to do this in our lifetime.
Right, right. And as far as to comment on what you said, as far as people checking out, I completely know what you're talking about there too, because when I view human life, you know, whether someone has a very basic mundane life or however we view it, but everybody's life has a real calling and a purpose. And once we've finished that, you know, in we're no longer in a position that serves growth for anyone, including ourselves, you know, passing young or passing suddenly isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Oops.
And sometimes we can cross the bridge suicide and
intentional stuff, things like that. Hold on a minute. This is the first time I've had this problem. I'm going to mute myself a second.
Okay.
That's a first. Why don't we take a little break here? We've got Sharon online too. And she's from Georgia, and let's take Sharon's call. Welcome, Sharon.
Hello. How are you?
How are you?
I'm great.
Well, good. We welcome you to the show.
Well,
what is
thank you very much.
Do you have a question, or would you like Deb to do a reading, or
I'd actually like a reading, please.
Okay. I'm gonna mute myself for a second and make sure that I get my dogs quiet so that you guys can proceed.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Did you have a specific question in mind today, Sharon?
I'm actually open to whatever spirit feels that I need to know at this time, but I am struggling on receiving my own guidance, and I've tried for 11 years now to be able to accomplish this, and maybe if they could address the reason I'm not being successful in this consciously.
Okay.
I do get things through dreams, but through my meditation, nothing's coming.
Okay. Well, I just want to clarify. Did you say home garden? Is that what you said?
What?
What was the...
I can't hear you very good.
Oh, okay. Shoot. I wonder if that affected our audio. Was your question, and I had trouble hearing you as well, was your question about a home garden? Is that what you asked?
No, about receiving guidance.
Oh, receiving guidance. Okay, I apologize. It sounded like garden to me for some reason. Okay. One of the things that I'm getting, and the way that I do this, sometimes colors will actually represent, you know, part of the answer for me. And one of the things that I get is I do get an energy of frustration for you. And it's not the matter that you're actually not able to receive guidance. It's the form in which you're asking for it to arrive. The meditation that you're doing, when you're doing meditations, I'm drawn to a different speed for you. I don't know if you're trying to slow down too much and your energy is actually quicker, but I feel like energy is trying to come to you in a more natural form, but through the methods of your meditation, I feel like we're getting cut off a little bit when it comes to the messages coming through. Are you slowing down through meditation?
Am I what?
Are you slowing down when you do meditation? Are you trying to slow down, slow your energy?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm trying to go deep.
Okay.
And I guess that is a form of slowing down.
Okay. Well, going deep does not necessarily mean you have to go slow. And what I mean by that is a lot of people will have themselves sit in a quiet space, and, you know, do more of a regression method to get into a deep subconscious, you know, collective energy where they can receive visions. But the thing is they're actually cutting themselves off from the energy that gives them vision. Some people do respond very well to that method, and those are the people that are incredibly physically active, whose bodies are going so fast that their body needs to slow down so the mind can get in there. However,
okay.
What I see for you is I feel like your mind is already naturally very attuned and responsive to different stimulations. But if you slow the body down even more, you start to go more into a pre-sleep, pre-sleep type of energy, and therefore it can be a bit scattered. So it's like you're fighting, you're like you're energetically fighting the process of falling asleep and trying to have the vision at the same time. So what my suggestion for you is to actually do something physical, get your body doing something, and therefore your mind has clarity because, it, you know, whether it's washing dishes, if it's vacuuming, if it's making the bed, you know, something mundane that your body can physically do, and therefore your mind is free to roam, if you will, okay? And there you're able to, you know, through the intention of connecting in a certain way, my strongest suggestion is to connect with your spirit guides. I feel like you already have. I do feel like you've had success there. So what I would suggest is to connect with your guides and either visualize yourself, you know, but on the beach by an ocean, on a bench in the park. Visualize a specific location for yourself that you can go to seek a spirit counsel. So each time you visualize yourself,
I've actually been doing that recently, probably the last 5 or 6 weeks, trying to visualize my place at a specific spot and having them come to me.
Good. And that's really important to do that. Next time when you do it, try and keep yourself physically busy. Do it while it's during the middle of the day or, you know, like I said, while you're doing the dishes or walking to the mailbox or whatever you're physically doing, and then that way you don't have to get distracted by little things that happen in the room or, you know, things like that. So I feel like when you're on high alert, when your senses are really sharp, you're also sensitive to a lot of physical things going on around you. So what I get is I feel like if you do something physical while you're visualizing that, you'll have better success because it'll come quicker. It won't feel like it takes forever.
Now, what about all the mind chatter I get?
That, exactly. That's where, for me, that's absolutely true in the way that I go to connect. I do have the chatter. But the way I've always looked at it is it's not that your brain is doing something it shouldn't do. It's just that we need to duplicate that for our own intention. So give yourself, you know, some mind clatter that actually goes towards connecting to your spirit guides. So, for example, let's say, you know, you visualize yourself on the park bench. Visualize it being very active, okay? There's kids playing ball, there's birds, there's dogs, there's all kinds of stimulation that can be actually louder for you than what the other worries and the doubts and, you know, the whole mind ego stuff gets in the way. So give your mind something active to do, and it will replace the other activities. So it's just a natural transition. It won't feel like you're competing with it, you know what I mean? Or that you
okay.
have to push it out.
Okay.
It's just getting the right speed. That's all it is, and you're really close to it. So don't get frustrated. Just try to be creative in other ways you can think of it. You know, and even if you
okay.
have to visualize...
I am starting to get frustrated with the whole situation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's interesting, Deb. I was reading something this morning, actually, where it says that we have this sense that when we meditate, we're supposed to just quiet down and do all, you know, just everything. And that's not meditation at all. And I think that what you just said to Sharon is very important, is that we look at meditation in a different way, that we, you know, one of the things that I do when I meditate is, being a genealogist, I do, you know, some volunteer work for some of the sites where they need people to do indexing. And so when I just need to clear out my clutter, I just go on and I'll, you know, do a couple of sheets of a 1930 census where I just have to physically read and write, and it's gets rid of the mind chatter. And then when I get done with that, I usually have solved a case somehow. I don't know how it works, but I solved another case. I wasn't even thinking about it. So, you know, that's kind of what you're saying, Deb, isn't it?
Yeah, because, you know, everybody has their own form of meditation that gets to the end result. The end result is that you connect with spirit and you're able to receive information, you know, whether it's through your guides, through animal medicine, through people you love that have passed, or even just visualizing your future self that's coming back to tell you what you need to know, which happens to me a lot. You know, so there's different forms to reach that position. And if we have to do certain things to get to that, you know, and they're all different. You know, for example, some people, their form of meditation is swimming, you know, doing 10 laps. Or, you know, someone else, it could be going for a bike ride. Another person, it could be yelling at the TV while the news is on, you know. Whatever their form of meditation to get that sense of relief and that sense of quiet mentally. It's not so much the body, but sometimes we have to give the body something to do to get to the point. So it's just working that out, you know. And you know, Sharon, I would really think that for you, it's just a matter of giving your mind enough to be active with, so that it's not preoccupied by the other stuff.
There you go.
And what frustrates me so bad is there have been times I've actually had the visions, and I've actually heard spirit, but it's like once every blue moon, and it seems like I just can't seem to come to a place where it's happening on a consistent, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Yes.
I can't
sometimes
do it on command or anything like that when I'm seeking guidance. Is just
sometimes we try too hard.
Yeah,
and when
true.
We try too hard, we usually mess up. The best solution is to let go and let be and keep your mind, you know, active or physically active, and see if that improves. I think that's really what Deb's trying to, you know, give all of us some advice.
because you know what?
Do you know if when I do break through, if this will be a visual thing or a hearing or both, or what do you get?
Well, that's the thing right there. That right there is what needs to go away, is the how, the why, the all of the micromanaged aspects to it.
Okay.
For me, what I found is being very successful is to ask for a specific sign, okay, but then be open-minded to however it shows up. You know, because some days
okay.
you're going to be more receptive visually, and then some days you're going to be more receptive to a dream. But this takes years to really refine it, you know, and it takes discipline, it takes time. But you also have to remember, you know, your environment shifts, and so we also shift to our environment. So our methods of communication do change. They evolve. So what I would do is really just establish a strong back and forth, simple communication between you and your guides. And, for example, one of the ways that you can do it is, let's say, pick your favorite flower, okay, and say, all right, you guys, send me this, my favorite flower, and send it to me in a way that I can't deny that that's you communicating with me, and, you know, make it really, really visible, make it strong so that I can say, okay, I know that this is working. And let's say, for example, a week later, you know, you get a brochure in the mail, and it's all over the brochure is your favorite flowers, that kind of thing. So,
okay.
you know, asking for a specific sign but leaving it open-ended to how it comes really helps establish that trust. Because it's really what you're doing is you're trusting the methods to which they come, so then you can hear the rest of it, you know, voluntary, at will, later on.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it to both of you.
You're quite welcome. You're quite welcome.
Well,
let us know how it goes.
Okay, I will. And many
all right. That's great. Deb, we've got another caller on line 3. We've got Margaret from Ohio. Hello, Margaret.
Hi, how are you doing?
How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, thank you.
Well, good.
Did you have a question today?
I have a few questions, if I could. But one of my questions is, I have a business that I have my business partner calling people for me to join it. And I'm wondering when a lot of people are going to join the business, because I need money and... And one thing we're doing is filing a bankruptcy, but I can't file the bankruptcy till I get more money coming in.
Okay.
Because then we'll really be bankrupt once I file it and don't have the money to supplement the money we have already. And when does Spirit sure think I ought to file the bankruptcy?
Well,
I'm not going to file it for a while. I was thinking probably by November, by the latest I would file it.
Okay. Well, what I'm getting, and I want to give you a process of steps, okay? What I'm getting for you is with the business that you're looking at improving, the reason it's not moving forward yet is because I feel it's not meant to move forward until after the bankruptcy is out of your way, because you don't want
the bankruptcy. I can't do it before we file the bankruptcy because we won't have enough money to live on without money coming in from someplace else. I can't file the bankruptcy yet until I have the money coming in to supplement the money we have already. So Spirit's going to have to change that around.
Well, the message I'm trying to give you, and I'm trying to give you a heads up, okay? The path the path that you're going is the last thing you would want is in bankruptcy for it to attach to something supplemental that you're bringing in that can actually cut you off from working with that in the future. So what I'm saying is, if the supplemental that you're working with, it's kind of like the chicken before the egg thing, you know, the business that you're working with, if this grows, okay, and then which gives you money to file bankruptcy, the bankruptcy will attach to the business. This is what I'm seeing.
No.
Okay?
No, they won't, because I've got it going into a different bank account. It's not coming to our bank account. And they're not going to know we have the money coming in. I already know that. Any extra money coming in our bank accounts, they'll take. I know that.
Okay.
So this money's going into a different bank account, not our bank account. So they're not going to find this money.
Okay.
I already know that.
I think, Margaret,
I'm sorry to interrupt.
I think what she's trying to say in an interesting sort of way is that things happen the way they're supposed to happen in the order that they're supposed to happen. And right, if they're not happening that way, then there is a reason.
Right. Okay.
And that is really where the focus needs to be, is that perhaps Deb, help me out here. It's detaching from outcomes is where I'm trying to get to, is that somehow we attach to a certain outcome, Margaret, and that when we go and attach to a certain outcome and that outcome does not seem to fall into place, that may not be the right outcome.
Right, and that's what I'm trying to get at, is that your guides are actually trying to protect you from something you're not able to see ahead of, okay? And that's what I'm trying to deliver, is that there is a reason you're not meant to get this up off the ground, because somewhere in the fine print, the bankruptcy will attach to it. That is what they're showing me, and this is your message. So it's a matter of being able to, A, go in a different direction financially, or B, look at how things are tied together. But I feel that your guides are really trying to protect you on this, which is why it's not manifesting for you. And the reason they're giving as to what they're protecting you from is that this is something that, although right now it looks like they cannot attach to it because it comes through someone else's account, they're showing me an attachment. So I'm just letting you know that that's what I see happening, because somewhere along the line, that money has to be accounted for somewhere. So I just don't want you to get into red tape, even the other people that are putting this through their account or wherever this other account is. There still needs to be, some type of validity of what it's for and where it's going and what it's from. What they're showing me is there is a tracking to it, okay? And that bankruptcy somewhere, if this is part of it, will become connected and attached to it. I'm just telling you what they're showing.
You're fading out. I can't hear you.
Oh, okay. What I was trying to get to is that, you know, what they're showing me is that somewhere along the line, that even though this money is in a separate account, that it still will be visible in some way. It needs to be accounted for somewhere. So I am seeing the bankruptcy attached to it in some form is what I'm getting. So I'm just giving you the message. And so I think from here on out is to ask your guys what the next step is, not so much the outcome, but what the next step is. And as far as the date of filing, November does feel actually really good for me. For you, I get the color blue. Blue for me is peacefulness, peace of mind. So I do see November being compatible with when you want to file. But the other parts of it, the financial part of it, I feel needs to be reworked in a different way.
I didn't understand that.
Are you with us? Can you still hear us?
Yes, but I didn't understand what you said.
Okay.
You said to file the bankruptcy in November.
She said that the November does feel good as far as a time period, but I think what Deb's saying and is that you need to detach a little bit from what the total outcome is and try to make sure that the plan that you think you want now is the plan that your guides really think is going to be best for you. Isn't that what you're saying, Deb?
Yeah. And because I really feel they have a better method for you, a better step, a better next step financially. I just see a lot of red tape with this, with what you're doing. And I'm just trying to give you the message that, you know, there's other ways to bring the financial freedom you're looking for, and I don't know necessarily if this one's it.
Okay.
Yeah, you may want to, you know, do some meditating on manifesting I guess, you know, the better a plan for the business. I what I don't understand, are you trying to get out of the business? Do you not want to be in the business?
No.
Or do you want,
no, I'm you just want, starting this business.
You're just right. starting this business, but you want to file bankruptcy yes. with this business?
No, I'm filing bankruptcy on old debts.
So it's a personal bankruptcy, or is it a...
It's personal bankruptcy, and it's on
it
old
personal.
Debts that we're getting rid of.
Okay.
Right, but what I see happening is if you file bankruptcy after you start this business, they will attach to the business, even if the money is being filtered in a different account. That is the message that I'm trying to get through. So if you're planning on starting your bankruptcy procedure in November, I would wait on a new business until after you file. And in the meantime, look at income in a different way so that you are able to pay for the bankruptcy. This new business, I see them attaching to it. There's just red tape with it until the bankruptcy has already been filed.
Well, then... I file the bankruptcy sooner than November, file it now instead of waiting. So after it's filed, then we can get the business going.
Well, you mentioned November.
I have to have the money coming in.
Okay.
I'll go ahead and file the bankruptcy now.
Well, that's
not instead of waiting.
Yeah, I think we're doing we're analyzing this a little bit too much. I think what you need to do, Margaret, is you need to step back. You need to visualize this whole thing. Ask your guides to walk you through exactly how they see the result that would be to your best interest and the interest of others, and not try to make this. You know, decisions. You may find out that bankruptcy, you don't even have to file. There are other ways to get out of some of these messes than filing bankruptcy. You need to look at all the avenues. And, you know, we're getting ready to come to the close. We've run our hour, Margaret.
Okay. Well, I appreciate
I apologize, but I'm getting the wrap-up from our producer we've got about a minute left. But, you know, Deb, why don't you tell people how they can reach you? Maybe, you know, Margaret, you know, may be worth having a private session or something like that. So how do people reach you?
You bet. Absolutely. Well, the best way to get in touch with me is through my website, which is DebbieEdwardsInternational.com. And there's a whole lot of information there about the type of sessions I offer and also different types of payment options. My email is also another great way, which is voicesspeak@yahoo.com. Or they're welcome to give me a call. My office number is on my website. And I'm also all over the place, and Facebook is a great way to connect as well at facebook.com/Debbie Edwards Medium. This has been a great hour, and I appreciate the opportunity of you having me on, and, you know, definitely some interesting information coming through. What great conversations.
Yes, I've really enjoyed it, Debbie, and I appreciate you taking the time to share some of your thoughts, and I really am looking forward to the book. I really think that the concept of how that whole thing came together is pretty awesome. I really do.
Yeah.
In any event, I hope everybody has a wonderful 4th of July weekend coming up. This is Susan King. You can reach me at my website, www.susaneking.com. Be safe. Have a happy holiday. We will be off next Tuesday because we'll be traveling, but we will see you back on the 12th live. Again, blessings to everybody. Thanks, Deb, and we
You're
will
welcome.
See you in a couple of weeks.
You have been listening to Where Genealogy and Spirit Connect with Susan E. King. Each week we will focus on the spiritual journey of connecting ourselves with our ancestors. Join us every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific right here on BBS Radio. For upcoming show information, you can visit Susan's website at www.susaneking.com.